You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. You're listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for subscribing on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, or in Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. I'll be taking a one-episode break from talking about the best seasons in Miami Heat history. If you haven't heard those episodes, make sure to check them out when and if you have the time. But there was a recent piece on The Athletic with some co-reporting from Shams Charania, Sam Amick, and Tony Jones that has Heat fans getting excited and definitely worth talking about, so I've dedicated this episode to that news. The piece starts off by detailing a lot of what happened with the Utah Jazz prior to the discovery that Rudy Gobert tested positively for COVID-19 on March 11th. For one, it starts off indicating that head coach Quinn Snyder, as early as February 25th, 2 full weeks before Gobert's diagnosis, was already actively interested in following any coronavirus-related news. He has a brother in Seattle. He's from the Pacific Northwest. And there were concerns about the spread of the virus there, obviously because it had originated in Asia. And there was some concerns that it would spread, as it did, eventually to the United States through the Pacific Northwest. And so there were some issues there. And already Quinn was looking into the subject, trying to find out about it as much as possible, and worried whether or not his brother might have some kind of negative impacts. There's a business there that might shut down, and obviously it has at this point. But the point is that 2 full weeks before Gobert was diagnosed, the Jazz were probably much more further ahead than other NBA teams as far as looking into the possible impacts, trying to educate their players and things of that sort. And they were a little bit ahead of the league and most sports leagues in general as far as being proactive and trying to find out what was happening with the coronavirus, none of which, unfortunately, made a lot of sense. They were educating their players on the virus, on transmission, possible impacts, long-range concerns, but there was no sanctions from the team or from the league. There was no policy in place there. There was just a lot of talk, a lot of education. And a quote from the story from Joe Ingles kind of educates everybody as to how a lot of players felt at the time, that there were some concerns. They were hearing about it, but they weren't really taking it all that seriously. Unfortunately for them, because as we know now, it was something we probably could have dealt with a little bit more effectively had we known about it or taken these kind of concerns more seriously just a few weeks prior to the league actually shutting down on March 11th. Moving forward a couple of weeks, on March 9th, Rudy Gobert, obviously, perhaps a player who took it less seriously on that Jazz roster, finishes up a press conference, touching microphones from reporters, going about the locker room to touch other players' personal belongings and things of that sort. And after that, on March 11th, feeling somewhat sick, he does test positively for COVID-19. Some further details included in the piece are that while the players were waiting there, Chris Paul provided some beer and wine for players to kind of help pass the anxiety-filled moments while testing was taking place of all players, not just on the Utah Jazz, but for the Oklahoma City Thunder, who were playing the Jazz that night before the game was canceled. Of course, just hours later, the league suspended play for the 2020 season, and we're still here. So that was, you know, not quite a month ago as of this recording. And, well, about exactly a month ago, actually. But either way, the point is that there was a lot going on there with the Utah Jazz and educating players well in advance of, I think, the rest of the league. And that has really resonated with one particular player, fellow All-Star Donovan Mitchell, who was the other teammate who would eventually test positively within the Utah Jazz roster. And specifically, as reported by the piece, there are some concerns there as to whether or not the Mitchell-Gobert dynamic might ever be something that could be repaired. In fact, one source with knowledge of the situation, according to the story, says that that relationship does not appear salvageable, and that's a direct quote. So there are concerns about whether or not Utah is going to be able to rehabilitate that relationship, whether or not these two friends are going to be able to once again continue working together, and more importantly, I think, because they also believe that without them, without Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell being on the same page, Utah will never reach their full potential. There are questions about whether or not they are a legitimate contending team. I think that they're certainly up there. They're one of the better teams in the Western Conference, but there's a lot of depth there. There's a lot of high-end talent. They may not have enough to get past the Lakers, the Clippers, the Nuggets, etc. So while they may be a very good team, they might not necessarily have enough anyway to be a contending title, but they certainly wouldn't be if Gobert and Mitchell can't get on the same page, can't work together, and can't retain some kind of harmony in that Jazz locker room. So all this is particularly interesting to Miami fans, of course, with so little going on, and with Mitchell expressing some concerns about his relationship with Gobert, whether or not some people in the Jazz front office are already thinking ahead as to whether or not Mitchell might actually be able to play or is willing to play with Rudy at some point in the future, Heat fans are already contemplating whether or not Donovan Mitchell might be pried out of the Utah Jazz roster. This is, of course, Pat Riley's modus operandi. This is what he's always done, is to kind of read the tea leaves very effectively, see that there is a player that's disgruntled for one reason or another, whether it's contract, whether it's playing time, whether it's an untenable playing situation. Look, he got Shaquille O'Neal out of Los Angeles because he couldn't get along with Kobe. He got Alonzo Mourning out of Charlotte because he wasn't going to get paid because he didn't want to work alongside Larry Johnson. And now all of a sudden we're seeing Donovan Mitchell potentially concerned about whether or not he might ever be able to get along with Rudy Gobert again. And so it makes a lot of sense for Miami fans to kind of say, Pat Riley, it's an opportunity here for you to pry Mitchell out of Utah. So if we assume that Mitchell is in fact upset with Gobert, is it an opportunity for Miami to make a move to acquire a third All-Star alongside Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo? I'll talk about that next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Obviously, a lot of us are stuck at home right now. There's not a lot of us, a lot of places for us to go. There aren't a lot of options. But one thing that you can do to make the time pass a little bit easier is to use Postmates to have food and other items delivered to your house. Whether it's an early morning breakfast burrito or a 12-pack of beers while you're watching some of these great games being replayed on NBA TV, sometimes you just need what you need delivered and you need it fast. And that's where Postmates comes in. If you're like me, you probably start thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're still eating lunch. I love food, and that's why I love using Postmates. They deliver food from every restaurant I can think of right to my door, but they don't just deliver burgers, sushi, or pizza. They actually make my life easier with grocery delivery and whatever I can think of delivery too. Convenience stores, clothing stores, you name it. Right now, a lot of us are scared to leave the house or concerned anyway about trying to get out of the house. Postmates makes things easier for us. No more trips to the store. No more late night fast foods runs. I don't even have to worry about where to grab lunch anymore. I just download Postmates, find my favorites, and get anything I want delivered within the hour. So for a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. So to start your free deliveries, download the app, use code LOCKEDONNBA. That's code LOCKEDONNBA for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. Following up on the report out of Utah that the relationship between Jazz All-Stars Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell may not be salvageable, according to some sources. And of course, that has Miami fans thinking about the potential of adding Donovan Mitchell to the Miami Heat roster. So let's break down whether or not it actually makes sense for Miami to even consider adding Donovan Mitchell. Before even getting into the logistics of it, something I'll do in the next segment, for now, let's see whether or not Donovan Mitchell is a good fit in Miami. Well, obviously, he's very young. He's in just his third season, drafted a few years ago at the same time as Bam Adebayo. He was selected just one pick before Bam, and so he is the right age group as far as if you're looking at the kind of core that you want to build. He was drafted in 2017. He's just 23 years old, so he's also another young player there to pair alongside Adebayo. And even as Jimmy Butler is aging, you have Mitchell and Adebayo as your two young all-stars there. It makes a lot of sense in that, if you look at it from that kind of perspective, to add a guy like Mitchell. He is also, you know, an all-star in his third season, something that Bam also was too. So it just makes a lot of sense as far as whether or not you kind of want to add a player of his caliber to Miami's roster. However, There are concerns about his playing style. He is a little inefficient as a shooter. He's improved this year, but overall there also are concerns. He's a volume scorer and shooter. He is averaging about 24.2 points per game, a 51.7% effective field goal rate. He's shooting a career high 36% from three-point range on about seven attempts per game almost, just shy of seven attempts per game. Pretty good, actually. I'll be honest with you. A lot better than I thought. I did not think he was that good a shooter or that he attempted that many threes per game. I know he can be a little streaky at times, but there are moments there when you're not necessarily confident in Mitchell's three-point shooting. But given this, he's going to have some bad games and some good games, but he's still a pretty high-volume scorer. He does get to the line quite a bit. He's averaging, not nearly enough for my taste, but he's getting to the line about almost five attempts per game, something that you would think would improve alongside Bam and Jimmy Butler, shooting 86% from his free throws, too. So he's a guy who can shoot well from the free throw line. He shoots well from the field, 45% from the two-point range. I'm sorry, overall, 45%. And then he shoots 36% from three-point range. So not bad shooting numbers. And again, 24.2 points per game, pretty good. And again, at his youth, he is an incredible scorer, somebody that makes a lot of sense there. He's also a dominant ball handler. I think part of the reason why the Mike Conley addition didn't work as well is that Mitchell probably thrives with the ball in his hands. So if I'm looking at Mitchell and his acquisition, I could see that maybe there might be some problems with fit. Jimmy would have to play a little bit more off ball, something he could probably do, although that mitigates one of his best attributes, which is making plays for others. And so Mitchell would probably be the more ball dominant guard. He would have the ball in his hands a lot. That would reduce Jimmy's ability to create plays for others, but it's not something that's, I think, a insurmountable aspect for Miami. I think they could probably find a way to get those two together. I think if Eric Spoelstra can figure out how to get the most out of LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, you can figure out a way for Jimmy Butler and Donovan Mitchell to coexist in the same roster. Those are probably the biggest concerns about whether or not you might want to acquire a player like Donovan Mitchell, but there is also the fact that you're looking at the 2021 free agency period and the plan to add either Giannis Antetokounmpo or Bradley Beal or Victor Oladipo. Well, with the acquisition of Mitchell, those options aren't realistic anymore. You've got Bam. You've got Mitchell, who's going to get a big payday in the future. You've got Jimmy Butler already collecting a lot of money in 2021. Not to mention other free agents like Duncan Robinson, plus this year's free agents like Goran Dragic, Myers Leonard, Jay Crowder, Derek Jones Jr., etc. Tying up money with Mitchell it absolutely negates the plan to add a guy like Antetokounmpo in 2021. Now, I'm not sure if that's a big a deal. I think a lot of Heat fans are thinking about 2021 as a done deal as far as trying to go after Antetokounmpo or Beal or Oladipo. But if you can acquire Mitchell right now, I'm not sure that it matters. Like, I think getting a surefire whale, an all-star, a young all-star in Mitchell who can continue to get better, who can continue to improve, trumps any potential, any plan that could fall apart. I mean, we made moves in the past to acquire Kevin Durant or Gordon Hayward. Those fell through, and then you're kind of left holding nothing. And I think if you can acquire a player like Mitchell, then you'll figure everything out after that. To me, that makes much more sense. We all know that he was high on Miami's wish list. We all know that when he was drafted, it was just one spot before Bam Adebayo, and there's a good chance that with Dwayne leaving in 2016 as a free agent, that you could acquire Mitchell, and he's the first piece there to replace Dwayne. Like, he would have slid into that spot automatically to become the next Dwayne Wade. It would have made so much sense there, and so it was unfortunate. Obviously, if you've been listening to this show for years, you know that Mitchell was the player that Wes Goldberg and I very much wanted in that draft. Unfortunately, he went just one pick before the Denver Nuggets, who then wound up trading him to the Utah Jazz for Trey Lyles, of all things. Either way, he's somebody that's been on Miami's radar for a while. He's also been associated with Dwayne Wade. He's made no secret of the fact that he's patterned his game to some extent after Dwayne Wade. He's a little bit undersized. He's also very explosive, very long-limbed, an adequate defender who can continue to improve. And, he's a better three-point shooter than Dwayne ever was. So if you're looking at him at 23 and you're making comparisons to Dwayne, Those are pretty good. And I think he's an obvious fit here in Miami. And I just don't see much of an obstacle as to whether or not you would make that move. I can understand the reason of saying, well, Antetokounmpo is without a doubt a better player right now. He is a legitimate MVP. Mitchell could regress as far as the shooting is concerned. Who knows what could happen. But those plans, they can so often fall apart. You look at the New York Knicks as proof positive of that. Not just the examples I laid up before in Durant and Hayward is when it comes to Miami. But you're looking at teams who have mortgaged current years to sacrifice for a future that falls completely apart. And then you wind up signing 8 power forwards and having no clear destination, no clear path to greatness or anything like that. As much as Antetokounmpo might be the player that you'd obviously want and that you have some connection to because of the fact that he shares an agent with Bam Adebayo, etc., I think with Mitchell, that puts Miami into prime consideration right away. I think a team of Bam, Jimmy, Donovan Mitchell, plus whatever other players you're able to retain in free agency or to add around that core three makes it for a real title contending team. I really do think that. I think you have Donovan creating offense for others, shooting. Maybe you could even have him play off-ball a little bit with Jimmy still creating actions for others. You can make Jimmy more of an off-ball scorer, something he's capable and comfortable with and has shown the ability to do. And, of course, you have Bam doing what he does. He's still initiating offense. You're still dumping the ball into Bam and having him work from the high post and create plays for others. He's going to have to improve his long-range shooting a little bit. But either way, I can't see a downside to it. There's just so much going on there when you look at the potential of adding a guy like Mitchell. I mean, a clear all-star, young, a guy who can rebuild around, and there's concerns about money and things of that sort. I'll get into those in the next segment, but I think I've made it pretty clear that a trade to acquire Donovan Mitchell is in the best interest for Miami. But how likely are they to pull it off? I'll get into that next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. So as I mentioned before, getting into the weeds a little bit about whether or not Miami could actually acquire Donovan Mitchell, that's very tricky. It's not just a matter of plugging him into the trade machine and hoping that you can come up with a good solution there, because for one, he is 23, he's an all-star, and he's obviously a player that Utah has viewed as a centerpiece, a building block. He's also on a rookie scale deal. He's not making a whole heck of a lot of money right now, even though the team's exercised their player option and they've got him under contract for another year, but he's due for a big extension. He'll enter a restricted free agency similarly to what Bam Adebayo will do in a year. And so it's not about being able to just acquire like salary for like salary. You can't move something commensurate as far as the amount of money that Donovan Mitchell is currently making in order to acquire a player of his caliber. He's currently making $3.6 million for the rest of this season, another $5.2 million in the 2021 season. So obviously, one of the better values around the league. You can't not just move $5 million worth of salary and get a player of the same caliber as Donovan Mitchell. That's just not, you know, likely. So the other option then is for Utah. They may not want to move Donovan Mitchell. If the relationship is as fractured as a lot of people think it is, or as the sources think it is, then maybe the more likely scenario for the Utah Jazz front office isn't to move Mitchell, but it's to move Rudy Gobert. I thought about whether or not a scenario would make sense for Miami to acquire Gobert. He's just not a very good fit for Miami's roster as currently constructed. I like Gobert. I know a lot of Heat fans are kind of disparaging him. One, because he quote-unquote shut down the league. Two, because you want to make comparisons between Gobert and Hassan Whiteside a couple years ago, or Bam Adebayo as your starting center now. But Bam is playing the four spot ostensibly just because you're starting him alongside Myers Leonard. He gets a lot of minutes with Kelly Olynyk. What do they share in common that Gobert does not? They space the floor. They're kind of outside of the perimeter a little bit. They're not packing the paint the same way Gobert would, and that gives everybody on Miami's roster a little bit more freedom to operate in the painted area. And I just don't think that's going to be happening if you have Gobert and Bam on the same team. So as much as like Gobert, and I think he's an incredible defender that changes a lot of the game defensively because he can be a very good perimeter defender. He can force a lot of bad shots. We've seen it when Miami's faced them. We've seen it around the league as well. You don't value Gobert as much because he might be somewhat one-dimensional, but he is a very, very good player as far as his defense is concerned. I just don't see that scenario as far as acquiring Gobert. So looking at Mitchell as the more likely option, if Miami were to express any kind of interest, and if Utah does think that they might be able to move Mitchell, I think it's going to be very hard to pry Mitchell out of that roster. Again, he is 23. For all the reasons Miami wants him, Utah wants to retain him as well. And I just don't know that this is... I don't know that this is a report to be taken as seriously as it is. I think right now, for one, The Athletic is looking for content. They're looking for people to kind of generate some news. I think Donovan's pissed off. But I also don't think that he's that pissed off that he can't repair his relationship. And I think they even mentioned in the story, Utah officials have made it clear that there's no exact way of knowing whether or not it was Rudy who passed on the coronavirus to Mitchell, or it might have been the other way around. So Mitchell might be holding a grudge, if in fact he holds a grudge, for nothing. It might just be because he's pissed off at Rudy and he wants to, and he thinks that he's the one responsible for getting him sick, although Mitchell has since recovered and he has tested negatively for the coronavirus. But either way, you know, there may not be anything to this. Mitchell might be the cause of Rudy getting sick. No one knows. And it doesn't really matter anyway, because right now, again, both of them are fine. They're on the road to recovery, thank God. And so it's probably been blown out of proportion. I think Donovan spoke on Good Morning America a few weeks ago after his positive test, made it clear he wasn't happy with how irresponsible Rudy was. But I don't think we've seen anything, at least around the league, we haven't seen a lot indicating that there is some kind of longstanding aggression or frustration with Gobert for getting him sick or anything like that. Again, I think a lot of this might be getting a little exaggerated. However, if there is a wild card in this whole scenario, it's that what a lot of Utah Jazz fans think, that Mitchell is exaggerating this whole scenario for good reason. It's to get himself out of Utah anyway, because he wants to force a trade, because a lot of players, particularly black young players, don't necessarily want to live in Salt Lake City. I'm not sure if that's true either. I think you can make a case that a lot of players want to play in Utah, that they want to play there and get paid, regardless of whether it's in Utah or Timbuktu. But the reality is maybe there could be some issues there. Like Donovan Mitchell's from the New York area. He may want to play in a bigger city. He played in Louisville. My feeling is, and he's told me this before, he likes Salt Lake City because it reminded him a lot of Louisville. It was a small town where basketball is an obsession for the people that live there. And I think he appreciates that. He played ball in Louisville. He loved the atmosphere there. He wanted to play in a city like that. And I think he found the right scenario for him in Salt Lake City. But let's assume that he does want to play elsewhere, as Utah Jazz are being a little paranoid. But either way, it seems like that's a concern for them. And maybe he wants to play in a bigger market. And he's entering that point in time where he can continue to expand his brand. Not something he's likely to do in Salt Lake City. As a one-time All-Star, as a 23-year-old, he has to work very, very hard to build his name, his legacy, his brand. And that's a little harder to do, I think, in Salt Lake than it is in Miami, in New York, etc. So there are connections to Miami, but they are a little flimsy. But there is one tie that's worth noting. As far as the flimsy connections are concerned, yes, he's patterned his game after Dwayne Wade. He's talked to Bam. They were one-time All-Stars together this past year. I think there's mutual respect there. I think when Pat Riley was scouting him, and during going through the pre-draft, process, he spoke to Mitchell, and I think there's mutual respect there, as I said before. And I think Mitchell would probably be interested in coming to a place like Miami, just because there's a history here, because I think he's the kind of player who loves the work. I really do think that he would be a great fit in Miami if he would be interested in that sort of thing. I don't know. I haven't spoken to him about it. But there is another connection worth noting, and that's that his agent, or agents, because he actually has two listed, they represent Tyler Johnson, Kem Birch, and perhaps most importantly, Dwayne Wade. That's not insignificant, and that's because of this. Johnson, of course, got paid while he was in Miami, and so there is absolutely I think a great appreciation from those agents and his agency, CAA, as far as Miami and what they were able to do to get a player like Tyler Johnson paid. Ken Burch, of course, got his first opportunity in the NBA with Miami. He wasn't a long-term roster addition, but he was a player who got an opportunity and was able to stick around. And so maybe there might be some appreciation for what Pat Riley and the Heat front office has done. And of course, well, Dwayne Wade is Dwayne Wade. I think that's pretty obvious as far as, you know, everything that Miami has done for their player in the past couple of years, not just giving him his last dance, but making him such a top priority and retiring his number and repairing any kind of fractured relationship that there might have existed in 2016. So I think that's actually very good news that they share this kind of mutual connection here as far as the agency is concerned and Pat Riley and the front office. But what would it take to actually pry Mitchell out of Utah? That's where it gets a little trickier too, because again, you're not going to get commensurate value just on matching salary for salary. So what would be enough on Miami's roster? It would have to be, I think, include Tyler Hero and possibly two first round picks, maybe a first rounder and a second rounder. That could be enough. The thing about Hero is that he plays the same position. He's a scorer. I think he could be electric there. I think, look, on the surface, I have no idea what they'd want in exchange. And it doesn't seem like it's enough because you have a 23-year-old all-star like Donovan Mitchell, a guy who's more explosive, who's a different style of play than Tyler is. And so it doesn't seem like it's enough. I can hear the Utah Jazz screaming, Jazz fans screaming via the internet right now that a deal for Hero and two first-rounders wouldn't be enough. I don't think it's that lopsided. I think Hero has one potential. He's only 20 years old. He's white. I think that's a huge appeal, to be 100% honest with you. I think a player like Tyler Hero in Utah, in Salt Lake City, would be beloved there. And that's not to say whether or not Hero wants to play there, because I don't think he's a Salt Lake City type of guy. He's got a little bit too much drip for all that. But either way, I think he would be beloved by that fan base. He's a great scorer. He's a great three-point shooter. He's got the verve. He's got the ability. He's got a lot of style there. I think he could be a guy that could be a linchpin of that offense. And so I don't think it's that bad. I don't know that you'd want to give up two first-round picks. Again, on the surface, if you ask Heat fans, they'd probably say that's too much to give up, even for a player like Mitchell. If you ask Jazz fans, they'd probably say that's not enough to give up for a player of like Mitchell. So it's kind of hard to navigate whether or not anybody is right, which side is might be right or wrong. Again, and I don't even know if that would be enough. They might want a secondary player, another wing-type player, maybe a Derrick Jones Jr. if he's still under contract, if a deal is hammered out sooner before the season ends, which isn't likely either. So I don't know. I don't see exactly what it would take to pry Mitchell out of that roster. Although I think Hero would be a great fit in Utah. I think a first rounder would be more than enough to kind of help supplement. It'll be a late first rounder, maybe a low value, but you can get another second in the future. That could be enough. I look, there's no way of knowing for certain. It could be lopsided. I think when it comes to trades, everybody always is lacking in nuance as far as what might be enough to pry player X out of situation X. My personal feeling is that Hero and a first rounder and another second would be enough, because I think Hero has that kind of potential. I think he could be an all-star in the future. He is also young, and I think he has a lot of potential, and I think he could be an all-star in the future. And I think so when you look at it from that perspective, it's not the same thing as saying, well, you're giving up an all-star for somebody who may not pan out. You're right. Hero may never pan out. I also think if you're looking at trying to package Hero or making Hero the central, piece in an acquisition for Bradley Beal, that's a little different, because I think Beal is a little bit more established. I'm not quite as sold. If I had to rate Mitchell versus Beal, I think Beal's the better player. I think he's also the better fit in Miami. I like Donovan Mitchell a lot as a player, as a person, and I like his fit in Miami, but I think his value is not the same as a Bradley Beal's, and so a deal centered around Tyler Hero and a first rounder should be enough. I don't know. Now, let me know what you think, to be honest with you. If you're listening to this podcast, you have different ideas about what it could take. I'm curious to know whether or not you think I'm way off base here. I think it would be more than enough, and I'd like to see it happen, because again, it puts Miami in title contention. It gives you the big three that you wanted. There's no waiting around for 2021. There's no waiting to see Giannis take a meeting with Riley and then just ultimately selecting Milwaukee or elsewhere. Who knows? There's no trying to push for Oladipo. There's no trying to push for Beal. You have your superstar here. You sign them long term. You're secure in your future, and you establish Miami as another destination for years to come. You immediately go to the top four. If you're not there already, you immediately go to the top four in the Eastern Conference, and you become a clear-cut title contender for the next few years while you have Bam and Mitchell continuing to improve together as teammates on this roster. It just seems like it makes so much sense to me. So thank you to The Athletic for providing a little bit of interesting content and also, helping us ask the questions that we'd like to talk about during this, difficult time. There's not a lot going on, but it's interesting to get into the weeds here and kind of reflect whether or not a Mitchell fit would be perfect for Miami. Let's hope that it happens. But that's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag HaskellHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support. Yeah! Wrap it up, B.